is your Polycast for Friday, December 16th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, finger-pointing at the Capitol, and Gopher football players say they won't play. Governor Mark Dayton is on the offensive as he tries to pressure Republicans to get behind his plan for a health care rebate that they could pass in a special session. On NPR News Today, Dayton said Republicans wanted bigger health care changes than could be considered in a one-day special session.
I just, you know, really was stunned that they would pull this kind of stunt at the very last minute with a clear intention of waylaying a special session next week to help these people in Minnesota, 121,000 people who need and deserve this premium relief.
Republicans accuse Dayton of shifting the terms of a deal. Dayton says a deadline to work out tax cut and construction bills for the potential pre-Christmas special session has now passed. The only proposal in play is a 25% rebate plan for some insurance buyers on the individual health market. University of Minnesota Gopher football players say they'll boycott all football activities, possibly including the upcoming Holiday Bowl, until the suspensions of 10 players are lifted. The players were suspended earlier this week after what they say was an on-campus investigation into sexual assault allegations. Peter Cox has more.
In the end zone of the University of Minnesota practice facility last night, three Gopher leaders lined up in front of a row of cameras as their entire team streamed out of the locker room to stand behind them. Everyone was in uniform.
We, the United Gopher football team, issue this statement to take back the reputation and integrity of our program and our brothers that have faced unjust Title IX investigation without due process.
That's wide receiver Drew Wolitarski reading from a statement.
The boycott will remain in effect until due process is followed and the suspensions for all 10 players are lifted. We further request that Kaler and Coyle an apology and demand that these leaders are held accountable for their actions. This decision for the players to take the stance is not easy, but important to the action to preserve the integrity of the program and ourselves.
The student athletes and their attorneys say the suspension of 10 players came after an investigation and preliminary determination by the U's Equal Opportunity and Affirmative Action Office, which does all Title IX investigations. The attorney for the players says they're appealing those determinations. Title IX is a federal law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender. Schools are required under federal guidelines to investigate all sexual assaults on campus. In their statement, the players criticized the response of athletic director Mark Coyle, saying he didn't give straightforward answers to their questions about suspensions. They also demanded a closed-door meeting with University Board of Regents members Michael Hsu and Darren Rocha to discuss how to, quote, make the program great again.
I have no objection whatsoever to speaking with the players.
Darren Rocha has previously raised concerns about the U's Title IX investigation process. He says he'll need to speak with board leadership and Michael Hsu first.
Whether I can respond to their concerns to their satisfaction remains to be seen, but the dialogue, you know, is something that I'm more than happy to participate in.
Wolitarski also addressed Holiday Bowl organizers, fans, and the U's December 27th opponent, Washington State University.
To that end, we respectfully request that the Holiday Bowl committee be patient during this time while Mark Coyle considers reversing his decision to suspend.
Among the players suspended were several who'd been part of a restraining order earlier this fall. The order, which was later dropped, made allegations that some were involved or present when a woman was sexually assaulted. The Hennepin County Attorney's Office declined to press charges related to that incident. However, Title IX investigations have a lower standard of evidence than criminal cases. They also go by the Student Code of Conduct, which has different definitions of consent and sexual assault than criminal law in Minnesota. U President Eric Kaler, along with Athletic Director Coyle, issued a statement last night saying they understand this is a frustrating issue, given that the university cannot share all the facts because of student privacy laws. But they said the decision was based on facts and reflects the school's values. They said, quote, "We want to continue an open dialogue with our players and will work to do that over the coming days. It's important that we continue to work together as we move through this difficult time." end quote. Antoine Winfield, a former Minnesota Viking and the father of freshman Antoine Winfield Jr., one of the suspended players, says he's unhappy with how the university has conducted itself through the entire process.
I'm just upset about how all this went down, and I'm here looking for facts and demanding answers.
Winfield says he'd like to see Kaler and Coyle gone. After his player spoke, head football coach Tracy Clays tweeted, quote, "Have never been more proud of our kids. I respect their rights and support their efforts to make a better world." Covering education, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
The federal government has dealt a major blow to one of two proposed copper mines in northeast Minnesota. The U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management have refused to renew mineral leases held by a company called Twin Metals. The government also launched a process that could lead to a 20-year ban on new mining near the boundary waters. Dan Crocker has the story.
Twin Metals Minnesota is in the early stages of developing a huge underground copper-nickel mine just a few miles from Ely and the boundary waters. The company has projected the mine could create 850 jobs and operate for at least 30 years. But Kathleen Atkinson with the U.S. Forest Service says the agency determined a mine would pose too great an environmental threat too close to the boundary waters.
We're concerned about the impacts of copper-nickel mining and sulfide deposits because there is extensive research that shows that should impacts occur, it would be virtually impossible to mitigate those impacts.
Twin Metals says the decision is a devastating blow to the future economic vitality of northeast Minnesota. And company spokesman Bob McFarland says the federal leases are critical to the development of the mine.
We believe that the action taken by the Bureau of Land Management is contrary to federal law. We've already filed suit earlier this year challenging the authority of the Bureau to make such a decision. That lawsuit will continue, and we believe we will prevail.
McFarland says the company will consider all options to push the project forward. Ely Mayor Chuck Novak called the decision deflating.
Well, it takes the hope out from all the people that are looked at a brighter future with great paying jobs, family living wages, a boost to the economy.
The federal government also made another move that could have impacts far beyond the decision on Twin Metals leases. The agencies initiated a process that could block any new mineral permits and leases in the watershed of the boundary waters for 20 years. That would cover an area of 234,000 acres in the Superior National Forest. The proposal doesn't impact the Polymet mining project about 20 miles to the south in a different watershed. But Frank Ongaro, executive director of Mining Minnesota, says such a move would impact several other mining companies exploring for copper, nickel, and precious metals near the BWCA.
All this does is chase investment away from the U.S. and make us more dependent on foreign governments for our metals. It has nothing to do with a project, nothing to do with science, and everything to do with politics, nothing but political BS.
And politicians were quick to weigh in. Minnesota GOP House Speaker Kurt Dowd called the decision an attempt to kill all the mining projects they can while the lame duck Obama administration is still in office. Governor Dayton said he's pushing to create jobs in northeast Minnesota.
This is one exception where the danger to a priceless treasure, the boundary waters, is just too great, in my judgment, to bear that risk.
Meanwhile, the Interior Department plans to call a timeout on mineral development in the area for up to 2 years while it conducts an environmental review of the proposed moratorium. Becky Rahm of Ely, who's national chair of the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters, says that will give Minnesotans and people from around the country a chance to weigh in.
There will be a comprehensive look at science of the water, the forest, the whole ecosystem, to understand what the risk would be with introducing a toxic industry like copper mining in this place.
Rahm says it would then be up to the next Secretary of the Interior to decide on the 20-year ban. And she says despite the change in administration, she's hopeful. She says protection of the boundary waters is not a partisan issue.
They understand that there are very special places in America that should be off limits.
It's unclear whether Twin Metals leases could be overturned by the incoming Trump administration, or if they can be, how quickly that could occur. What is clear is that the often contentious debate over the future of copper mining in northeast Minnesota is still far from over. Covering the environment, I'm Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
U.S. Department of Justice officials will soon begin looking into how one Minnesota police department operates. The St. Anthony Police Department asked for the review after one of its officers shot and killed Philando Castile at a traffic stop back in July. Reham Fashir has more.
Over the next 8 to 10 months, the Justice Department will try to find out as much as it can about the St. Anthony Police Department. It'll bring in experts, talk to cops, talk to the community. They'll ride along in squad cars and look at documents. Basically, they're trying to see what's working and what's not. Ron Davis is director of the DOJ's Office of Community-Oriented Policing, or COPS. The federal government tasked this division with changing how police operate across the country. Davis says this is not an investigation into the Philando Castile case, but rather the department as a whole.
We see this not as a way, to be very candid, that you try to fix a broken department. The recommendation that we will provide will basically not fix a broken department. It will take a department to be excellent in 21st century policing.
This collaborative process plans to look at how use of force is internally investigated, how officers are trained, and how St. Anthony police interact with the public. 15 other departments have either gone through this or are in the process of similar assessments. They vary in size from Calexico, California, with around 30 officers, to big city departments like Philadelphia's. The DOJ just finished a review of the San Francisco Police Department. Davis says already shootings there are down by 40%. But critics say the federal program isn't always effective. Jeffrey Fagan is a professor at Columbia Law School who studies policing. He says police departments, with unions and others involved, can be resistant to real change.
Getting everybody to sit at the same table and agree on a set of principles and actions to follow through on is sometimes a hard task given these kinds of different force fields, you could call them, within the police department.
But St. Anthony Mayor Jerry Faust says his city and the surrounding areas are on board. St. Anthony police patrol Lauderdale and Falcon Heights, too, where Castile was shot. Faust says he's committed to reforming the department and needs help.
We need the support of the community. We need the support of the people of color also to give us a bit of time in which to see where we can go in this. We also need the support of the people who are doubters.
As part of the review, the DOJ plans to look at traffic stop data from St. Anthony. It's one of the issues Castile's death has highlighted over the past few months. An NPR News analysis of 5 years of data showed blacks are far more likely than whites to be ticketed by St. Anthony police. Minnesota U.S. Attorney Andy Luger says he hopes this collaborative process will engage the public in an important conversation about community policing.
For the families who have lost loved ones, for the communities who have lost sons, for the police departments who have lost officers, and for the cause of justice, we must all work together to address the deep concerns that we have heard voiced over the past months and year.
The Justice Department plans to hold the first of a series of community listening sessions in January. Reham Fashir, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here next week.